Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice. Cause I speak of the pompousness of love. People talk about me, baby. Say I'm doing you wrong, doing you wrong. Well, don't you worry, baby, don't worry. Cause I'm right here, right here, right here, right here at home. Cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun. I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I sure don't want to hurt no one. I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. My love and all.
Hey there, John. Give me a panic attack.
Well, yeah, probably, but the Zoom people changed the interface.
Yes, a little bit they have. And you're a little coming in a little bit low.
Now I have to go through the browser.
Oh, I need a volume up on you a little bit. Let's see.
I can volume it up.
Yeah.
Test.
A little bit more.
Test. It's getting up there.
Yeah, that's better. Leave it right there. This is a new rig. This is not your normal rig, is it?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, I was going to say I was worried you were going to give me a heart attack, but I don't want to say that considering what's happened recently. You know what I'm saying? Oh, all right, hang on. Let me get this going. Nope, wrong one. Here we go here. Okay. I'm so happy to hear your voice.
Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And it's the 24th of March.
And you sound like, you're every time you start, it's all like this, and then he comes into like that. It's like 24th of March, and then it's like that.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's weird. Maybe turn the volume down a little bit.
But you had me turn it up.
So, John C. Dvorak. Let me tell you something. We got a lot to talk about. John C. Dvorak is back in the house after seeing the blinding light. He was walking into the light there, folks. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. We're going to talk about a new close to the pin tonight. Airport's a mess. The futures move that we saw. And the market's from the brink. All is good right now. As a matter of fact, looks like it's going to be a very cheery day tomorrow because, you know, the war's going to be over. It's over. It's all done.
Jeez.
Correction in some areas, but U.S. dollar rise, gold, silver, Bitcoin drop, reversing around. But crude oil dropping off a cliff after the all good signal from President Trump. There's a 15-point plan, whatever that means, that they're presenting to Iran, and the markets think that that's like a deal. You know,
they're making a mistake.
They're making a big mistake. So let me tell you what happened here. Let me just replay Andrew's nightmare, which was also John's nightmare, more of John's nightmare than Andrew's nightmare. But here I am on a Tuesday evening, getting close up to the 9 o'clock hour, as we do. And testing out a few things, making sure everything is copacetic with settings and put the music on. And, you know, it's 8:58 Eastern time. It's 9 o'clock, 9:05. Very unlike John. But you know what? Historically, we can admit that sometimes you forget every once in a while or something comes up. But within a couple of minutes, you're there. 9:15 comes along. Nothing. Andrew's in a total panic.
Even though I left a message, I should mention.
The message that was never received. But nonetheless, I erased it and I'm lying, okay? So there you are.
No, it's never received. Probably wasn't.
So here I am starting to dial every number I can. I call Jay. I call Mimi. I'm not getting any answers. I'm like, what's going on? Now I'm starting to think something
happened.
Something taint right. So why don't you give me the story?
I went to the...
And by the way, your sound sucks.
It's interesting because Adam has had no problem with this sound.
With it being on the browser?
Oh, I've never seen this before, the browser thing. This is new. So I load up the link, and it normally it goes through two stages. One, it opens up your room, and then puts me in there to...
Well, you should try to go to log into the room itself.
I went and clicked on the thing. Yeah, I tried. But they changed something. Something was changed.
All right. You're not going to be happy with the sound. Go ahead.
Something was changed. I can believe it. I can believe it's going through the browser.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, I went to the doctor. She didn't like the sound of my heart, and so she gave me an EKG and immediately called 911 and sent me to the hospital.
Now, why did you go to the doctor to begin with?
That was an appointment.
Oh, so you went to a regular appointment. I didn't know this part. You went to a regular appointment and said, hey, you know what? Things aren't good. Call 911. That was kind of how it went down?
Yeah.
Really? You didn't feel bad at all? You didn't feel...
No, I did have a funny chest sensations, but I was not alarmed by it.
But you thought it was gas?
I never said that.
Acid reflux.
Yeah, well, that's she thought it might be.
So you go to the hospital, you get to the emergency room. They put the EKG probably on you, all the stuff on you, right?
Oh, yeah, they hang all this crap
on. They lay you in a bed, and you wait. Now you're nervous, you're scared?
2 days, but yeah, they lay me in the bed. We talk about some stuff with a whole bunch of cardiologists. Two days later, it turns out, not by my count, they give me a double bypass.
Now, let me ask you something. Seriously, how scared were you being in the hospital, them telling you there's like a major heart situation going on here?
I actually wasn't scared. I was in the hospital. I would hope that they could do their job. To be honest about it, I was not scared.
You weren't scared at all?
No.
Huh. I was scared. I was like, call Mimi every 5 minutes. Did she tell you?
Mimi's got a lot of stories.
I'm panicking. I'm calling Jay. I'm like freaking out. I'm like, I need to know. And I'm texting. I'm like a lunatic. But, and Mimi was great, by the way. She told me all sorts of updates all the time. What was going on? You know, how there was one point when they said that you were really being kind of nice. And I'm like, oh crap. Something's really wrong.
They have some powerful drugs.
Yeah. So you're in the hospital for what, a week, right?
I was in the hospital for 2 weeks.
Was it 2 weeks?
Yeah, at least.
Sheesh. So now how you feel?
Terrible.
Now you feel terrible?
I felt, you would too if they split open your chest and then put you in a situation where you have to learn to walk and balance again. I can't get any sleep. I don't feel great.
You don't feel great. But you know what? You're a trooper. We're talking about what?
You know the funny thing is? I am a trooper.
You're a trooper. Major trooper. Yeah. Probably lost a couple of pounds.
Probably about 8.
But maybe do you feel any better, like in terms of breathing and stamina and any of that yet?
No. Because
you will.
No, not at all.
You will.
Yeah, that's what they say.
That's good. Well, I'm glad to have you back from the brink, buddy.
Well, you're welcome.
And by the way, so during that period of time on the No Agenda show, like nothing ever happened. Mimi just like became a podcaster. She's just right there with Adam.
Yeah, she did a good job. A
few shows, yeah. And then we had, of course, JC, which is really JS, and we had to get to the bottom of that whole thing. But we had JC, your son, on talking about all sorts of really interesting AI, tech, and news items. And he was...
Yes, he is the AI family man.
And he was right there. He was ready to go.
Yeah, I was impressed.
I was very happy. That was great. We had some Ryan Radisky put together some best ofs just in the case. We did miss one show for the initial situation.
Yeah, that show, yeah.
Sorry. And why it happened on a Tuesday? Don't go to the doctor on a Tuesday. Go to the doctor on a Wednesday from now on.
Actually, I went to the doctor on a Thursday, and it was just Tuesday when they got me out of everything.
Hmm. Well, glad you're back and doing your things. What do you think on the family backup plan?
What, having the family do the shows?
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Jay was doing the newsletter. Don't forget about that.
Don't forget about Jay. Everybody's doing their part.
Yeah.
Yep. So when are you going back to your house?
When I can walk up 21 steps effortlessly.
Mm. So it's going to be a little while.
Yeah, I guess.
Mm. Well, I feel for Jay and the fam taking care of you. But everybody is very happy and very relieved. So the whole audience, a lot of people, you know, you got a lot of love during this period. You know that, right?
Yeah. It's great.
There's a lot of Twitter love and all that going on. All right. Now, during that period of time, by the way, you pretty much crapped out right when the market crapped out, just to let you know.
Yeah, I watched. No, I was paying attention. When you're in the hospital, you got to watch. There's nothing to do but watch TV. So I just had on, you know, CNBC the whole time.
So I'm figuring that have you ever thought that maybe the world revolves around you and your illness is actually being pushed out to the rest of the world, and that's what's happening? When you get better, the whole markets will clear up?
Yeah, that would make it investing a lot easier.
Small caps have taken a brunt of the selling recently. We saw them go into a correction, down 10%. The official number of a correction is down 10%. The bear market is 20%. Whoever figured these out, well, that's what it is. So small caps are taking the brunt because there's a lot of reasons. One of the things is interest rates have been going up. As a matter of fact, we hit a relative high. I think we're about 6.4% or so on the 30-year mortgage after clipping 6%, below 6% recently. The 10-year is about 10, well, it came down a little bit today, but it's approaching like 4.4% after going under slightly. So this war, this situation is causing a lot of people just to sell things, selling gold. Gold has had one of its worst months. It had its worst day in history. President Trump likes this stuff because, you know, it's the greatest of all time in anything he latches onto. Well, gold has had its worst day ever in history. So did silver recently.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And it's popping back up. Right now we have this 15-point plan.
Be popping back up. Gold should not be at that price.
Right. It's all moving. Well, one of the reasons is the dollar came up a lot. Safety trade was there. People were just selling everything to sell everything. Margin calls were happening in South Korea. Those markets were down 10, 12% in a day. They're moving around that much. 10 to 12% a day for a market. It's unbelievable. They are the hardest hit. We're going to talk a little bit about that as well. Interesting, even though the small caps are 10% from their high, they're still up for this year. About 2%. And stocks moved up on Monday after, on Friday, after the close, President Trump came out and said, hey, you know what? I think we're going to be wrapping this up. Futures moved up. Then over the weekend, they're starting to hammer them with more bombs and saying that they're, you know, going to keep on pummeling them and maybe sending more troops and all this. Markets open up lower on Monday until, of course, President Trump at 7 a.m. said intense negotiations over the weekend, which I don't know how you do that as you're bombing them, but okay, postpones the target attack for 5 days after giving a 48-hour ultimatum. Now, here's what's really cool about this. I'm at the gym about 7 o'clock doing my thing. Markets down, maybe Dow's down about 300 points. This is about 7 a.m. The S&P is down about 0.75%. The NASDAQ's down as well. I turn around. I'm like, what happened? Futures take this leg down pre-market, even after this Friday excitement about winding down the Iran affair. E-mini futures trading on the CME record a sharp and isolated jump in volume at 6:50 a.m. A similar pattern was observed in the oil markets. Huge volume at 6:50 a.m. At 7:05, Trump posts a market-moving announcement about Iran on True Social. Futures moved up 1,000 points, and oil was down 8 to 9%. $500 million futures bet 15 minutes before the announcement comes out.
Gee.
How do you like that?
Yeah, well, somebody got lucky.
Yeah,
that's what it is. That's the ticket.
Yeah, this could happen. This is.
Yeah, all the time.
So these are the kind of things that
get investigated and busted. I doubt it.
No, already they came out and said that because the way that the trades were placed in incremental levels, it very grouped in various groupings, very difficult to spot who the actual trade was from. Which to me, I'm like, wait a minute, let me get this straight. We are in a world of digital footprint.
Yeah, it's funny.
And we know very clearly who trades what. How do we not know who trades these futures? Something's amiss.
Makes no sense.
No sense. So, question is, was there really conversation? Do you think from what you've seen, what you've read, what you've watched, what you've heard, there were these conversation negotiations over the weekend, because Iran has denied it.
You know, I thought about this too, but it goes back and forth with it, who denies it or what's going on. I can't believe. I don't know. I think there is some talk going on, but not with the top guy.
Who is it? With the janitor of a mosque?
No, maybe a bunch of military guys.
The military guys are making the plan, saying, hey, we want an end to this. What are you going to come up with? Because already they're talking about, hey, we're only letting those that are friendly to us through the Straits of Hormuz. And if anybody else wants to come, possibly a $2 million fee, smart. Put a little toll on that whole deal. And they're still shooting. Everybody's still shooting everybody.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about a few leftovers, some things that we need to discuss from what was left from last week or so. Because it's still very pertinent and timely, newsworthy. All of a sudden, with private credit, there's a problem. There's admission. You know, you and I have been talking about this about, for I say, 3 months pre-HA, right?
Maybe.
You know what that is, right?
No.
That's pre-heart attack, pre-HA.
Oh.
We've been talking about this for a while, 3-4 months at least, maybe 6 months. So Blackstone approved redemptions at a record 7.9% from its flagship private credit fund.
This is the big news story too on all the networks.
Yeah, this is all of this.
What was the idea of opening up this kind of investment to the public?
That was where they got stupid. Greedy. It's all about greed. And the problem is that when you have retail investors, one of the things that is really not appropriate for most retail investors, unless you are high net worth potentially, is to have lockup periods and limited redemptions. Low liquidity doesn't work. Everybody, no. The retail's like, yeah, don't worry about liquidity. Fine, you know, because they're thinking they can make all this money. Once something goes, they freak out and want their money back.
Yeah, they're the worst.
They don't have the temperament. And it's understandable. But they don't have the temperament that or the time horizon that an institution does. And that's why it was a big mistake trying to get these things into 401ks. I'm so happy this is happening to a degree. Not that I want anybody to get hurt here. Before they actually managed somehow to get this stuff into 401k plans. That would have been...
They already had some 401k.
I'm unaware of... There may be some private credit management going on where they bought like... Apollo or some of these other names out there, but I'm not aware of any true private credit that was allowed in the 401ks at this point. The problem is now you're seeing all these redemption requests, right? Once redemptions beget redemptions. And when you say, hey, we're limiting, we're you know, putting up a gating, what does that do? If you have private credit, John, you have an investment, and, you know, you hear that all these people are being gated and can't get their money out. What do you do?
I don't invest.
But what do you do if you had money in the private credit?
I try to find a way to get it out.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
Yeah. It's like a run on a bank.
Exactly. So Blackstone's experience suggests these concerns are asset class wide, not limited to a small group of managers. That's another issue. Apollo Management CEO Mark Rowan warned that a shakeout is coming from private credit firms driven by rising defaults on loans to the software companies. So all of a sudden, these software companies that just started up and we gave them all this money, they're defaulting already. How long is this? The software companies that we lent all this money to, is it in the last, what, year and change?
Yeah.
And now they're defaulting. Hmm. Rowan, who is pretty, I would say, a straight shooter. I met him. I told you I met him in one of my good friends is his college roommate. I met him. I said hello to him in the bathroom at an event at actually my friend's daughter's wedding. Nice fellow. I'm like, hey, Mark, how are you? You want to do the podcast? He's like, you know, email me. We'll see what's going on. Nope. Anyway, he emphasized the shakeout is likely to be short term, calling it foreseeable and predictable. Unlikely to be short term. He argued that investors should prefer having credit risk reside within private credit markets firms rather than on a bank balance sheet backed by government-issued deposits, all this stuff. And latest, Apollo is curbing redemptions from one of their biggest private credit funds. What's interesting, though, is that we're seeing a major ramp in the last probably 4 weeks with the default rate. Check out these charts. Right now, according to Michael Gayed, he said private credit default rate just hit 9.2%, which is higher than the 2008 bank loan peaks. There's about $1.8 trillion in assets, $100 billion in secondary liquidity, an 18-to-1 mismatch. Wow, so there's a little chart here. Private credit defaults back in 2008, 6.5%. COVID, 4.2%. 2024, the private credit issues, you know, just kind of lollygagging along, was about 5.8%. Now we're at 9.2%. That's pretty significant. It's almost a 10% default ratio. So, I don't know. I don't know where it's going to get any better. And now that we have a world that interest rates are going up and bond prices are going down, this is adding to the struggles. You know, the other thing, one of the things it means is that one of the ways private credit works is they lent money out, they do their deals, they do a thing, goes through a few years, they get the money back, they do another deal. Now the funding, the backup funding is not going to be there. People are like, I don't want this. It's going to take years to solve to get back the trust.
Yeah. Many years.
Yep, many years. Now, meanwhile, we're seeing more funding for OpenAI. There was another deal tonight done, about $10 billion also. Amazon just invested $50 billion. Vidi invested $30 billion. SoftBank invested $30 billion. That was like a week and a half ago. That investment boosts OpenAI to a $730 billion pre-money valuation, which marks a jump from its $500 billion valuation in October. So OpenAI is going to use the money. Yes, why? How? We're going to buy more chips from NVIDIA and Amazon. So right back to the same circular financing deal. And I think, who invested tonight? There was another investment tonight. I don't know if it was SoftBank. Somebody invested another $10 billion today. 2 weeks ago, they got $50 billion. What do they need another $10 billion for, may I ask?
They don't need any of that. They can't get the chips. They can't, you know, you can't build out fast enough. It's just a bunch of money that's sitting there. Well, even though it's virtual, it seems like. I don't know. This is a disaster waiting to happen.
Yep. OpenAI said it's expanding its existing $38 billion agreement with Amazon Web Services, AWS, by $100 billion over the next 8 years. Again, these weird long-term commitments on a product that we don't know if it's going to actually be the play. Right now, there's a big thing going on with, of course, competitors. We have Anthropic and questioning whether the government's going to crush Claude. And as we're going through this next phase of agentics, there's something called Open Claw Project. Have you seen this?
Yep. Well, yeah. My son is very familiar. Other people I know are using it right now.
It's supposedly you could program this thing and do all sorts of stuff for yourself.
Yeah, I think Adam is doing something with Open Claw.
Open Claw. The Open Claw Project. So there's a lot going on with this. But again, who is going to be, well, there could be more than one winner here, can't there? I think.
Well, with tech, there's always more than one winner for a while. And then there's one.
Right. I mean, we saw things like Microsoft. Microsoft was, where was Microsoft? Microsoft was as high as, I'm going to look this up right now. Microsoft stock was over 500, I think. Let's do a look up real quick. MSFT. Microsoft currently closing in on, that's not the right name. That's definitely not the right name. Oh, that's good, though. Interestingly enough, Dell hit a 52-week high today. Microsoft is at 374. It was trading at 525 in November. Nobody thought that Microsoft would have a problem. They're on the cutting edge. They're funding OpenAI. They got a piece of OpenAI. They're funding this. They got their own models. They got their own LLMs. It's Copilot, $30 a month. It's all this money coming in, and it's great. They're down huge. They're down, you know, that's amazing. Let's see what's down. Year to date, down 22%. Year to date. High of 555 on 7/31/2025. It's $200. That's like a 40% reduction or something like that. 35-40% reduction.
Somebody must know something.
Yep. So what's your go-to AI these days?
Well, it depends on what I want to do, but I mean, I use different things for generating art, but I'm still of the, I'm a Perplexity user for a search.
And?
Well, that's what I said at Google, and I mean, I can still use the simple searches, but if I want to do some AI deep dive, I will go to Perplexity, and I will ask it some very complicated question and let it answer it. And then just to fact check it, I'll use Grok and ask the same thing.
Do you ever ask it to fact check this item?
I use other systems for fact checking.
Oh. I mean, I've gotten used to using Grok these days because I think it gives a really complete answer to things and does a little bit more research. OpenAI, ChatGPT, I don't know. It's good. Not my favorite. The Microsoft is good for, I use it for like grammatical checking, right? You know, rewriting. Say, you know, take this sentence, make sure it sounds right.
The Microsoft product.
Yeah, that's all I use it for. Well, it's based on OpenAI. But the Microsoft product, I find myself yelling and cursing, literally cursing, at the Microsoft Copilot mobile app that you use as a chatbot. You talk, you have a conversation with it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, listen, I've told you 1,000 times, idiot. Do not ask me follow-up questions that are meaningless. So, Andrew, why are you interested in this? I'm like, really?
Yeah.
But it keeps asking me anyway.
Complaint.
Oh, so annoying. Netflix, you saw that a few weeks ago. Netflix exited the bidding war for Warner Brothers Discovery after a competing bidder submitted a superior offer. I don't know if we saw that coming, but seemed like it. Decision followed pre-planned bidding scenarios with the CEO, Ted Sarandos, saying the company knew exactly how to respond once the higher offer emerged. He said the Paramount deal is likely to drive significant cost cutting, including roughly $16 billion reductions and thousands of job losses. He emphasized that Netflix will continue investing in its own business and explore new ways to collaborate with theater owners rather than pursuing large acquisitions. Netflix rose a whole heck of a lot after that. Shareholders didn't like the deal. It was pretty amazing how they went after this so hard. It seemed like it was working. And then I guess, you know, the Warner Brothers Discovery just used Netflix to bid up the price, it seemed to me.
Well, they did a good job.
They did a really good job of that.
Yep.
I don't know how this whole thing plays out after the fact, but tax refund update, bottom line, you are screwed. Trump administration is seems hell-bent on keeping the money. They are not going to refund if they don't have to. I don't know how you feel about that, but it was...
I don't know. I have mixed feelings about the whole thing. This whole media consolidation. Is it going to be any good? Is it going to do any good? I don't know.
Well, what about the tariffs we were talking about?
The money that we're getting from all these guys right now is not that good.
Right.
So what about going to consolidate and just make it worse?
I'm telling you, I don't know. There's going to be this huge cost cutting, supposedly.
Yeah, how's that going to help?
It doesn't help. I mean, the winner of this seems to be Netflix. We're going back to that. I was talking about tariffs, but we're going back to Netflix now. The winner seems to be Netflix in this whole deal.
At the moment.
I was mentioning the fact that the Trump administration seems hell-bent on keeping our money from the tariffs. They don't want to give it up. They're going to court to battle it. How do you feel about that?
They have to keep the money in an escrow account in case they get sued, lose, and have to give it back. I think that's the real reason.
But if it was deemed illegal to charge those, don't you think they have the obligation to refund the money? They're saying it's too difficult.
That's a good one. But I think they're going to stall and try not to. That's why they're keeping it. And then they're going to, you're going to have to beat it out of them, let's face it.
It's not, this is going to sound really naive and stupid. Not very nice. Not playing fair.
Yeah, it's money. You know, they get a bunch of money.
I guess.
Just give it back.
Why would they give it back? They don't have to. And then even if they do,
it's like the government. This reminds me of the some years ago, I had a couple of employees, and then I closed the operation down. 2 years later, I get a bill for their taxes after they're long gone. And I talked to various people. Well, you can fight it. It wasn't a lot. It wasn't nothing, but it wasn't a lot. You can fight it or just pay it.
Yeah.
I didn't owe it.
Right. Yep. They know that you're going to pay it. Did they give you any kind of break at least, or negotiate a break?
No, of course not.
Yeah. But you paid it.
Yeah.
This proves that point. Yeah.
Yes. Once they get a hold of the money, they're not going to budge.
Let's talk about airlines after a rather bullish commentary from Delta last week. United Airlines is now cutting more unprofitable flights over the next two quarters as it prepares for a prolonged period of high jet fuel prices due to the Iran war, even as strong travel demand has allowed U.S. carriers to raise fares. It's interesting because this is a tale of two different outlooks. So Chief Executive Officer Scott Kirby said in a staff memo, this is for United, that the airline is preparing to raise prices and dealing with things because they think that oil is going to rise as high as $175 a barrel and remain above $100 until the end of 2027. Can you imagine?
That's nuts.
Now, maybe what they're doing is they're just planning. You know, maybe...
With a bad attitude.
Yeah, maybe. They said that their annual fuel bill at those levels would rise by about $11 billion. More than twice the profit it earned in its best year ever. So do you think ticket prices are going up anytime soon?
Gee, let me think. Probably.
Yeah. So I think we're all in for that. And you know, if you look at actually the inflation outlook right now, the way that the Fed futures closed and some of the expectation numbers today on the close, expectations are for inflation to reach 5% by the end of the year.
If this Iran situation is not resolved, I would agree with that.
Yeah. And even if it is resolved, do you think oil's coming back way down very quickly, or is it going to stay? And if it does even come down.
It's like 61. What is it right now?
It's like 90, 88, 89.
Oh, no, I thought it was down. Yes, like low 90s though, right?
Well, let me see. It was 100 yesterday, and then today with this announcement, it started coming down overnight. So right now, it's 87.44.
Okay.
Down 5%.
West Texas.
That's West Texas, yep. Yep. Futures up about 1%.
Go back to the 60s.
Well, if it goes back to the 60s, we still have this hump that we have to deal with. Yeah. This period of time that truckers had to pay a lot more, the diesel was some ridiculous price, jet fuel prices went up. And then we have to add in all the different petrochemicals and the things that go into that utilize petroleum-based products, from plastics to various solvents to
the fertilizer.
Well, fertilizer is a whole different problem. That's a big problem.
That's huge. And there's also helium.
Yeah, helium's a weird one, isn't it? Did you know that before this all happened?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And that's used in like semiconductor cooling and things like that, right?
It's used in the semiconductor business, making chips.
So we got that. We got urea, which is a fertilizer that about 40% of all urea comes from through the Strait of Hormuz. And here we are entering into a really sticky time. I talked about this on the Disciplined Investor last week, this idea that we had this frost and freeze in Florida last week, and most of the country relies on certain products like corn and other different vegetables from Florida during this specific time of year that the freeze happened. Corn was pretty much wiped out, and the yield on a lot of other crops were you know, 80% down. And now we're backing into planting season without enough urea, and that's going to create a problem for yield as well. Therefore, your prices on vegetables are going up. And fruits. Yep. Vegetables and fruits. Better stock up and get yourself a tree. Better start growing your own stuff is what you need to be doing.
Yeah, it's not that hard.
Yep. I got the iguana problem down here. You know, you grow something, the iguana eats it. They're mean.
You can't fence them off? You can't, there's no iguana scarecrow.
You could definitely fence them off. You could fence off and put some kind of, they're big and they'll, you gotta definitely fence the whole area, almost make them a separate room. But we'll see. Diesel prices above $5 a gallon on average across the U.S.
Can't you poison the iguana?
There's not one iguana. There's a lot of iguanas. There's an unlimited supply of iguanas. They don't die. They're cold-blooded. And even when the temperature hits 20, they fall out of the trees and they just go into like a hibernation for a while.
Are they edible?
According to many people, they call it the chicken of the tree. And, when they fell out, people were gathering them up and barbecuing them. Mm. I was a little skeptical. I saw this all over YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, all these people with all these iguana and they're just like eating them. And all, I'm like, I don't know about that.
It'd be bull crap. Yeah.
I don't know. Seems a little gross. Now, you've been around a while, John. Can we talk for a minute about the similarities to what's going on right now and what happened in the 1973 oil embargo, 73, 74?
Yeah.
Do you find there's some similarities here?
No. Excuse me. No, I don't see a similarity because the other one was a like a cartel or a monopoly. In the form of a cartel, deciding to put the screws to the industry to screw things up and get prices where they wanted them. This is, I think, so different that I don't think they're comparable. And yet we haven't yet even gotten close to what happened during that period where you can only buy gas on odd days or even days, or you had a license plate, you couldn't do this, you couldn't do that. Couldn't drive on a certain day. It was ludicrous. And the lines at the gas stations were a million miles long.
Did I ever tell you what my dad did during that time? I was just a young lad. I was 8 years old. And my father decided that he would switch the license plates because it was odd and even on the license plates days to do that, right? But yeah. He decided we had a Cordova and we had something else. The Chrysler Cordova. He decided, you know what? Too much work. So for whatever reason, by the way, back then you also had to, it was like you had to make sure that your gas tank was full at all times. You couldn't have 3/4 of a tank. No, it had to be full. You'd wait on lines for like hours and days to get 5 gallons to make sure you're topped off.
Yeah, that was a bad idea.
So my dad decides he's going to swap the gas out of car A into car B. So that he doesn't have to, and then one tank will be fully empty, or at least close to it, and fill that up, right? Not a bad idea.
No, that's actually a good way to do it, if you don't mind siphoning gas.
Well, he decides he has a really good way to do this. He uses a shop vac. So he takes the shop vac and he starts siphoning the gas out of the car. And he stops the shop vac, and we look inside, and sure enough, there's a lot of gas in there. He puts it back together. He puts the hose back inside the gas tank, turns it on, and guess what happens?
It doesn't sound good.
That blows up.
Oh, jeez.
I get blown back like 10 feet. My dad now has no hair on one side of his face and on his head. Oh, I remember it like it was yesterday. He had some explaining to do to the neighbors on that one.
I guess.
Yeah, not a good idea. Not a good idea. Anyway, but what's happening now is that we could be in for a prolonged period. It took years. It took years and years to get things back to normal after that price shock. Do you remember that?
I do.
I don't think that this is going to be that different. I really don't.
We'll see.
Well, if we get the gas or oil from Venezuela, maybe. And if we somehow manage to get prices down, it's going to take a long time, though, because here's the problem. It's not just the Straits of Hormuz that's blocked. John, you know this. We've also blown up, not us, they've blown up areas in Qatar, Kuwait, LNG fields that produce huge amounts of LNG are just done. It's going to take long. So it's not just the boats moving. It's also the fact that we don't have the production now.
Yeah, now we also have the Valero refinery in, I think, Houston that blew up.
Yeah, things are not good. Meanwhile, FedEx raised its full-year profit forecast. It expects adjusted earnings to be between $19.30 and $20.10 a share for the fiscal year. And after they made this announcement, you know, things are great. The stock is up about 23% this year through last Thursday's close. FedEx does not expect the war in the Middle East to have a direct material effect on its business. But the broader consequences, including higher energy prices and volatile shipping patterns, are adversely affecting the global economy. But not FedEx. It's not going to bother FedEx. How is that?
Optimists.
How are they saying?
I have no idea. I don't know what they're thinking.
No material effect on our business. Even though we're going to have higher energy prices and volatile shipping patterns. No effect on our business. By the way, what do we do? Oh, we're in shipping. This is pie in the sky kind of stuff right here. Oh, I love this. You are following this, I'm sure. Did you see what was going on with the Supermicro co-founder?
No, I can't say that. Maybe.
Supermicro co-founder was charged. Shares tanked 28% last Friday after U.S. prosecutors charged three people linked with the company, including its co-founder, with helping smuggle billions of dollars worth of AI technology to China. These are NVIDIA chips.
Yes, I did see this.
The U.S. Justice Department charged Supermicro co-founder. This is a guy that's got to be pretty darn wealthy. This is Yixin Liu, sales manager Ru Tsang Chang, and contractor Ting Wei Sun with running a scheme to route U.S.-made servers through Taiwan to Southeast Asia. Here's what they did. They allegedly used Southeast Asian company as a middleman to place orders for high-end servers containing the restricted NVIDIA H200 and Blackwell chips. The equipment then was repackaged into unmarked boxes and diverted to China. To evade U.S. audits and customs inspections, the individuals allegedly created thousands of dummy servers and used hair dryers to remove and reattach serial numbers from genuine servers to the fake ones. So only three people did all this. Thousands of servers.
Seems like a lot of work for three people.
The founder of Supermicro, the sales manager, and another contractor sat in a room together with hair dryers, peeling and pasting and diverting. Does that seem a little funky?
Yes, it does.
It boggles the mind. Like, this is not a 20-minute a day ordeal. This is weeks full-time job.
Yeah.
And the founder is not, it's just crazy. So now, who did this benefit? Supermicro, which has had its own problems over time, by the way. Supermicro, which was, I will also share with you, an unbelievable runner a couple of years ago. We held this stock. It was unbelievable. It would not stop going up for a period of time. Fortunately, our screens took us out of it, and then the thing just rolled over hard, and it's still rolling. But who does this benefit? Well, companies that wanted these particular products, these server products, are not probably going to Supermicro due to the reputational decay. So where'd they go? Well, I told you a little bit a while ago, what stock made a 52-week high today? Dell. up 8% yesterday, up 7% today. Good earnings report last week as well. It's up like 25% on that. Stock is through the roof. Stock, let's see what that stock is, shall we?
Yeah.
Dell. That symbol is Dell, which is easy enough, thank God. Dell. All right, let's look. Dell Technologies, key stats. Year-to-date up 36%, 1 year up 61%. 1 month of 45%. It's at a 52-week high. It's close to an all-time high.
Yeah, I should put Dell in the game a couple of weeks ago.
Good stuff.
I saw this coming.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Dell is doing well. Amazon is going to be putting out a new phone called...
Once again, do you remember the old Fire?
I do.
I have one.
Did you like it?
I like the display. I like the three-dimensional thing. But it was cheesy.
Yeah.
The edges were like... You could take the edge of the thing and scrape it on it and you can cut yourself.
Really?
Yeah, the fit and finish was terrible.
Huh.